Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 29 of Digital Divination. So, Ron, how are you doing?
I am doing really great, actually. It's a really nice day, and I've been doing a lot of work in my yard, planting flowers and, you know, hanging plants and things like that. It's a really satisfying way to spend a really, really nice day. How about you? How are you doing?
Well, I've been out smoking, so I got this smoker from my sister-in-law. She was getting rid of it, and spent a couple weeks cleaning it out, and I just got it working this weekend, and yesterday I smoked a whole chicken, and that worked good. My sister-in-law was here, so she got to have some. This is up in Camino, and right now I'm smoking a rack of baby back ribs.
Ooh.
And I can't wait until after we're done recording, because then I'm going to go eat it.
Wait. So if you're done recording, plus however long it takes me to drive up there.
That's probably great enough.
We actually inherited a smoker from the previous owner of our house that we bought a couple years ago. I've taken an initial look at it, made sure it's clean, seems to be in working order, but I don't actually know how to work it. And I'd been hoping to use our mutual friend Mark as our resident smokering expert to kind of show me how it's done, but we haven't been able to get together because of the pandemic. But I'm hoping soon when we can get together, I can get his firsthand expertise. Did you talk to Mark at all, or did you figure it out on your own?
I kind of figured it out on my own. I had to take it apart, and I realized how relatively simple it was when I was cleaning it. And I just got a book off Amazon and kind of explained some stuff. And then it turns out my neighbor here, the house right in front here, Rick smokes as well. And so he gave me some recipes. And so I'm actually trying one of his recipes for a rub on the baby back ribs. So what type of smoker do you have? Do you know?
It is a box that is about 18 inches square and about 2 feet high. There. Mm-hmm. I can be no more specific than that. It's got a door that you open up, and there's a tray. It looks like there's two trays, and I think there's one for meat and one for wood, maybe?
Right. Yeah.
I actually went so far last fall as to get some pellets that I can burn in there for a smoker, and I have not opened up the pellets yet, even. I haven't figured it out. And I know in the back of my head, it's one of those things that is not mechanically very difficult. And once I figure out how to do it, it's just a matter of learning how to do it better. So it's tastier or more efficient. It's like fishing, right? I don't know how to fish, but I know fishing isn't hard. I just don't know the mechanics. And once I knew the mechanics, then I'd be able to talk to people who are way better fishers than I am, and I could get a lot better at it. I feel like smoking is the same way. I haven't yet gotten over the basic mechanical hurdle.
Is it coal fired, or is it electrical, or is it gas? Do you know?
It is gas.
It's gas. Okay. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, hearing you talk, presumably there are books on Amazon, or perhaps even websites that might tell me the answer.
Yes.
Currently it's right in line behind figuring out why my pressure washer doesn't work, and then figuring out how to fix out my pressure washer. Another thing I think I can do once I kind of get the mechanics sort of in my mind, but haven't done that yet either.
Oh, how long has your pressure washer been sitting?
It's been sitting for probably 2 years.
And this is the gas pressure washer?
No, it's gasoline, not
gasoline.
Yes.
Yes.
It is not a natural gas pressure washer. I don't know if there are such things.
It's probably bad gas.
That almost certainly. And I probably have to swap out the oil as well.
Yeah, well, the oil it'll still start if the oil has gone bad. But I mean, if it hasn't been changed. But
you'll know that the oil's bad if you start it up but the gas won't even start unless I swap out the gas.
Right. So if you drain it out and let it dry all the way, and then put it in fresh gas and kind of shake it around some to get the sediment loosed up where it's kind of gummed everything up. That might actually be good enough to get it started.
That could be the case. I understand there are some, originally it was handed down to me because there were some sort of sealant issues, which is a big deal.
Oh.
A cracked seal is a big deal for a pressure washer. And at some point, you know, I break down and buy a new pressure washer, but there is some middle amount of time I can spend before I decide to do that for my time value. And frankly, I get, maybe this is the game designer in me, right? I get no small amount of satisfaction for figuring out how stuff works. And the kids have gotten kind of tired of this, right? Because they have a toy that won't work. And I'll say, well, let daddy try to figure it out. And daddy takes the whole thing apart. And I'm fascinated with how it works, but I can't fix it.
Right. Well, you know, with if it's a water seal, that's not a, that wouldn't be a game changer. If it's something else with the engine, a seal, then I think that'd be problematic.
Right. And I don't know which. I wasn't told which when it got handed down to me. So that's one of the things to figure out. A lot of times you can check that kind of visually. Sometimes you can't, but but anyway.
Yeah. Well, cool. So I was thinking, speaking of taking things apart and not being able to fix them, I was thinking we could talk about vehicle chase rules.
Oh, yes. Let's do that. Oh, I have strong opinions about the vehicle chase rules in Starfinder, as a matter of fact.
Well, do you remember when we were going through Dead Sons? I think it was in probably the fifth book of that. There was a vehicle chase we had to do.
There was, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
And the interesting thing about that, so we kind of read through all the rules and we got things figured out. And then it just turned out that my operative just had such high piloting rolls that like two turns, we just kind of evaded them and lost them completely.
That was, and I think it wasn't even two full turns because I think it took you, we started, I think because of the story, we might've started a little bit ahead or something like that, but it was a situation where your piloting role was excellent. And then the enemy's piloting role happened to be terrible. And that was enough. The chase was over. And
yeah, once you get like two zones ahead or something,
it's
over.
Because that's exactly what happened. We started one zone ahead. You got another zone ahead. They couldn't catch up. Chase over. And that struck me as a real failing of the rules. And more specifically, simple rules are not by themselves a failing, but simple rules that are all dressed up to be very complex that end up falling apart very simply are just not particularly well-written rules. And vehicle chases are my primary example anytime anybody talks about overcomplicating a system and making bad rules. I'm like, oh, like vehicle chases in Starfinder, which in our, this is the same example that you have when we were playing the Dead Sons. I said, we were about to start a vehicle chase. All of us very diligently spent 30 minutes going through the, four pages of vehicle rules and vehicle chases and putting all that together. And okay, we got it. We know what to do. Okay, now let's start. Let's play the vehicle chase. And it was over in less than 10 minutes. So from a understand rules to application of rules ratio, it was a poor system.
Right. And I think the basic rules that we were using then are actually quite boring. You know, I mean, basically you can keep pace with another vehicle. You can try to speed up. You know, you can slow down, you know, a couple pretty basic things that you end up doing. And if there's two vehicles going and you're just trying to get away, that's actually not terribly exciting. And in fact, what, you know, we did is we had to maneuver some. There's some obstacles, right? So there's some hazards you can run into, different environmental hazards that can make your checks easier or harder. And I actually find that quite boring. And so my experience had been, oh, you know, all these vehicle things are really boring. Now, more recently, there's been a couple of adventures, Starfinder Society adventures, that have used modified vehicle chase rules, which I think make it much more fun.
Oh, this is really interesting to me because I had thought in the back of my mind, there is probably a way to revise these rules to make them more balanced, more fun, but I don't... I just don't have the incentive to put forth the effort because I just think the vehicle chase rules are dumb. So I'm excited to think there has actually been the work done, and it's been done on the organized play side of Paizo, which is where, frankly, a lot of great rules kind of come to the first sort of first appearance.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the issues with the vehicle chase that we did originally and kind of as the written is it's pretty much just the pilot doing stuff, you know, and, you know, we had a group of five players and everybody else is just kind of cheering on the pilot, I guess, you know, right. You know, so really not a lot going on. And so this first set that I went through, it was actually a vehicle chase, you chasing a vehicle that's trying to get away. And the interesting thing about that is when we were in the same zone as the other vehicle, we could actually do player actions. So you could go from one vehicle and attack the other, right? You could attack the driver, who unfortunately most vehicles has full cover. If they have a gunner on top, you can attack the gunner. You could also jump or fly from vehicle to vehicle and then do regular attacks and stuff.
Oh, then it becomes really a platform for the actual sort of combat that the game can do very well.
Right. And I thought, you know, when we did that, I thought, man, you know, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, this is another vehicle chase. I hate these things. And then we did that. And it's like, wow, this is like way more fun, you know, and my players had a blast because, you know, this is I think it was like a 5-8. So kind of a moderate level. So I actually have no idea what scenario the number was, but it was moderate level. So some people could jump and some of them could fly. And, and so that was very exciting, you know, like having a player leap from one vehicle to another, knock somebody down, attack and do stuff. The players had so much more fun than, oh, we're going to chase them and try to damage their vehicle or whatever, which is typically what happens in these vehicle chases.
Yeah. I'm going to try to shoot out the tires or what have you, or the hover pods or what have you.
Mm-hmm. So that was one case. And the other one was a scenario I just ran yesterday for, there's a convention in Sacramento called the Take Two Con 2. And basically they normally have a live con and now they're doing it online, and it was Take Two because last year, the first one didn't quite work. So here's Take Two of it online. And now this is the second Take Two. Anyway, so I ran this game for a convention there, and it was another modified vehicle chase, except your vehicle was trying to get away from like a big tidal wave. And so you started in a certain zone and the tidal wave started. It was a tidal action, but it's a 200-foot range of tide, which means it's a tidal wave coming, right?
Right.
So you start in one zone, they started another, and you have to go through all these other zones. There's 14 different zones to go through.
You have to go through them in order, or is there?
Yes, in order. Okay. There's no shortcut. And now some of the zones like had the same hazard across two or three zones, though. So it was just like 14 different things you had to do. And so each round, each turn, the tide moved one zone, right?
Okay.
So if you, and we started zone 7, if you aren't able to go at least half the time, right? If you aren't able to succeed at a piloting check half the time, the tide catches up with you and you're swamped or whatever happens, right?
Right.
And when I had played this a couple of weeks ago, we actually had two vehicles in the chase, and my vehicle made it there, but the other vehicle actually got caught by the tide.
Oh no! With PCs in it.
Yes. So, and there's some, you know, implications from that and everything. But the interesting thing was so a couple of things. So you're trying to advance zones, and basically you're using the basic piloting checks so you can speed up. But some zones, you know, oh, this is a zone on hard packed sand, so you have a bonus to speed up, or this has got really hazardous conditions, so there's a negative to speed up, or there's rocks and things you have to evade. So a lot of the same basic rules that you have for the vehicle chase are being used.
Right.
In addition, though, the players each can take an action each turn to do something to aid you. Like, oh, I'm going to make a perception check to try to avoid any obstacles out there. Or I'm going to make an engineering check to help adjust the steering to make it more efficient. Or I'm going to make an athletics check to help shift the weight around to make it easier to maneuver and stuff. And so each round, the pilot makes a roll, you know, and then somebody could use diplomacy or intimidate to have the pilot do better. So each round, the pilot makes a roll, just like Starship Combat. Everybody else can make a roll that will assist the pilot. And if you have a number of successes equal to the number of players, then you gain an additional zone. And if you meet the minimum, if you beat it by five, that counts as two successes.
Ah, and so doing very well works. Right. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, you only can use a skill one time. One person can only use that skill one time throughout the entire chase.
So once you've done your intimidate, you're done with intimidate.
But other people can intimidate.
I see.
And you can do other skills. So it allowed everybody to be involved. Everybody could try different things. The DC wasn't too high. And basically, I thought it was another chase that allowed everybody to have something rather than just the pilot trying to drive away.
Well, that sounds, frankly, fantastic. It's a little bit like Starship Combat in that everybody's got a role on the ship, and that role helps either the pilot or the gunner, frankly. Or that's really what Starship Combat is about, is who's the pilot, who's the gunner, and how are other people helping them. But it lets everybody feel like they're doing something to help with the advancement. And in fact, if you beat it by five, then it'll feel like you helped a lot. So,
mm-hmm. Right. And the thing I was thinking is, you know, wouldn't it be cool to combine these two modifications? So now you're chasing somebody and all the players can do something to help speed up. And once you get in the same zone, then you could actually start attack. All the players can attack and do different things too.
Well, that would be really neat. That would actually make for a really exciting chase. Now, let me back up to say, like the existing chase rules, or frankly, like the existing Starship Combat rules, they're the kind of rules that takes everybody rereading the book a little bit to kind of understand what's going on, or the game master to kind of handhold people through the first round or two. But in a system, in any campaign where you did that kind of a lot, right, you know, once a level or so, even that rarely, people would learn it and know it and it'd be kind of an exciting thing all the way through.
Well, see, that's the beauty, I think, of these particular things is I actually think they're really simple, right?
Okay.
So the first one is, if you're in the same zone, you can attack the people on the vehicle and you can actually jump onto the vehicle using normal movement rules and normal attack rules.
Right. That only works in a situation where you're trying to catch somebody, not when you're trying to get away, because nobody who's trying to get away is going to jump on the ship that you're trying to get away from. Because if I jump off to go fight somebody and then my pilot friend in the vehicle I just left blows away on these successes and suddenly they're gone and I'm stuck with the people I was trying to get away from.
Right. But if you have enough people that jump on the trailing vehicle and you are able to disable it, then the pilot can always come back and get you too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. Then you functionally escaped regardless.
Right. Right, like that. So anyway, I think that's kind of fun, right? And then this other thing where everybody can be involved in helping you. And the neat thing about it is there was just a flat DC. It was a DC 12. And so if beating it by five would be a 17. Everybody can contribute and you can just make up what, you know, here's the skill I'm using. Here's how I'm doing it. And as long as that makes sense to the GM, it's allowed.
That's a little bit like skill challenges that were that people either loved or hated about 4th edition D&D. I don't know if you played a lot of 4th edition or experienced a lot of skill challenges, but they were the
not
same kind. So they're the same kind of thing. It was very much, you're going to cross this string of mountains and the DC 15, and you're trying to get more successes. You have to get to six successes before you get to three failures. How are you going to go? And people will be like, well, obviously I'm going to use athletics to climb the mountain. Okay, great. Now that you've made athletics, you can't make athletics again. What are you going to do next to try to help? It lends to a lot of freeform role-playing that I think a lot of people very much enjoy. But some people pointed out it also really gets you out of the mind of thinking, where am I in the game world? What am I doing? And it puts your eyes on your character sheet to go, okay, what's my best skill? How do I justify that? Okay, now what's my second best skill? How do I justify that? And that's really immersion breaking when all you're trying to do is figure out why if you're the bard, why diplomacy always helps in every single skill challenge, for example. So I don't know. I think that I'm one of those people who thinks that skill challenges is kind of a brilliant idea, and I've liked seeing a lot of the implications of it. As you're describing the second kind of chase, that just feels very skill challenging to me, and for me, that's a positive thing. So,
well, I think in both instances, you can involve all the players besides the pilot. In the second instance, you can assist the pilot in doing their job better, which I think is neat. And then in the other instance, I just think it's really, really cool to be able to say, I'm going to leap from this moving vehicle onto that one and try to do something.
That is very cinematic. It's very tropey, right? That happens in the action movies all the time.
Yeah. You know, so to have that. Now, what we don't have a lot, and I have seen this in other ones, you know, kind of ramming and damaging other vehicles and stuff, you know, and I think if you include that as well, that really makes chases quite a bit more interesting than what we have seen in the basic rules is all.
Yeah. Well, I think you can be right. And I have not used much of that. As much as I'm sitting here saying, grumble, grumble, I hate chases, I've had to use them twice professionally. Once I developed a Starfinder adventure that involves a chase where you're actually not trying to chase down another vehicle. You're trying to chase down a great big creature that's being ridden away by somebody else. And I thought that was at least interesting enough conceptually that when I wrote the God Host Ascends, the last of the Attack of the Swarm adventure path, I included the same kind
spoilers.
Of thing.
No spoilers, don't say it, because I'm going to play that next. I'm playing that really soon.
There's a chase in it, and it is a chase where you're chasing a big creature there. That's as far as I'm going to say. And I thought that was interesting, but the chase rules didn't give me as much sort of expression on that.
Well, given that, have you read Starfinder Society? I think it's 115, Save the Rencrotas.
That is the one I was talking about in the first one. I developed that adventure.
Oh, you did that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So you did that one, and do you use the same chase rules in the AP too?
It's very similar, yes. I think I finessed them a little bit because the terrain is a little bit longer, and there are other situations. People are very much higher level in number 6 of Attack of the Swarm, and I had to keep that in mind.
Why did you develop that? I'm kind of curious.
That's a fair question. Organized play was behind, and I was ahead on my tasks.
Okay.
And so I said, hey, how can I help? Two points. One, I said, I'm a little bit ahead, how can I help? Which is always a good thing to say at your workplace when it's true. And I also am a big fan of cross-training, so I'd been sort of pushing for an opportunity to do more development outside of the Pathfinder space. And I make a pest of myself like this all the time, right? I'm always asking, all right, well, how can I help with a different type of development? How can I help in a different part of the company, right? How can I learn to run the cash registers to help out with that at conventions, even though developers don't usually? I'm like, but that's a different part of the company. I kind of want to see how it goes. How does a warehouse work? I mean, I'm curious in that regard about the company. And so I'm always sort of trying to push to do other things. And I happened to work this time. It happened to work where I'm like, oh. And I had 2 Starfinder Society scenarios. I think ultimately 4 or 5 Pathfinder Society scenarios I developed.
Wow. Yeah.
There was one right about, it might have been either right before or right after Save the Rencrotas. I don't remember the name, but Larry Wilhelm wrote it that I developed. The thing I remember most about that is Larry Wilhelm it's a delight to see his map turnovers. I mean, there's a lot of good things I can say about Larry Wilhelm, but I will also say his map turnovers in particular are a delight to see because he is just very good at communicating a story through the maps he gives. And I'm really kind of jealous. But anyway, so those are the 2 Starfinder Society scenarios. The Save the Rencrotas, it had something of a fundamental rules glitch that I didn't know, where you're sort of, at one point in the adventure, you're given a merciful fusion and said, go capture this thing without, and I didn't remember that fusions take 24 hours to attune to a weapon.
That happens all the time in society play. It does. So they fixed it now, saying, basically, you now have these same duplicates of your weapons that are merciful instead. But yeah, they did that. That happened in a bunch of scenarios.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, not just me then. Okay. Phew.
No, yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. So I remember that scenario very distinctly when I played it because the, these are spoiler alerts for Save the
Rank Rotas. Oh, yeah, for Save the Rank Rotas. Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah, spoiler alert. It has a fierce roar that has a fear effect. So it's like a fearsome presence kind of thing, but with a roar. Mm-hmm. And my operative that I had failed the effect and ran full speed for like 10 rounds or whatever. Well, my operative had really high speed.
Oh, no.
He basically, he outraced everybody. And yeah, so by the time he got back, you know, they've been done fighting for like, you know, 20 minutes.
Kind of thing. So, oh, yeah. That's been the problem with barbarians. I know people who shy away from barbarians because their will save is low enough that fear effects often make them run, and their speed is high enough that when they run, nobody's catching up with them, and they're never leaving. They're never coming back to the fight in time.
yeah, that's kind of funny. Well, anyway, so I don't really have much more to say about vehicle chases. That's kind of just what I wanted to point out because I knew you were not a fan. And so I wanted to show you the counterpoints to that.
Well, now, first of all, I feel a little bad that I didn't know all the stuff I just learned now back when I was doing a development of chases. But it does make me think that chases are not just something to be sort of shunned, but they've got some opportunity. And a lot of the advancing chase technology has been done. I ought to look into that. Mm-hmm. So I've learned a lot. Thank you.
Now, you know, they have starship chases, too, that are kind of similar to the vehicle chases.
Did you know that? Starship Operations Manual?
No, in Starfinder Society.
Really?
Somebody developed I think it's 3-12. No, I could be wrong. It's one of this current season 3's. It's like, I think it might be 312, somewhere around there. But basically, you're chasing somebody, and you have all these hazards you have to overcome that affect your piloting roles and things. And so it's kind of a similar flavor to, like, the last one where everybody can help out, you know, do different things in your roles to help the pilot overcome some of these things.
That wouldn't be such a big leap, I think. Once you've figured out the magic formula to have vehicle chases work and be fun and enjoyable and engaging, you could do the same with Starship. So that doesn't seem like a big leap to me, but it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the nice thing about it, it wasn't just like chasing somebody on a star field, which is typically what we do.
Right.
It was basically a series of skill challenges, but with, you know, cinematics exploring, you know, kind of explaining it and doing that and whatnot.
Was it the Kessel Run, where you're trying to make the Kessel Run in fewer than a certain number of parsecs?
Well, it was kind of like that idea. You're actually chasing a prototype vessel that's super fast, but really? It's a little glitchy. Yeah.
Huh.
And so you're having to really push it, and then there's all these kind of anomalies because you're around this big gas giant. So lots of things going on with that.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so that wasn't bad.
All right. Well, I guess there is a lot more opportunity there than I ever gave chases the credit for.
Well, now we'll see if we get more chases in some of the future things you're working on.
You know, I do have a Starfinder adventure through a third-party publisher that I'm about to be digging into. Although, I mean, if the outline doesn't provide for a chase, I won't shoehorn one in. But now I know that I've got some chase tools that I could use. That's good to know.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing you were talking about before. I'm actually curious about that because I have a opportunity with a different third-party publisher. Mm-hmm. I know the one that you're working at, and mine's a much smaller one. How much guidance do they give you compared to what the Paizo developers give? Does that vary?
I am going to have to defer that question because I don't yet have it. I suspect it is a lot, but I don't know that for sure. Part of the reason I'm delayed is that they, even though we've signed a contract, they have to get an outline to me, and they've said we're very robust in our outlines. You're going to be very much writing to spec, which is fine. I've long ago understood that there is you know it. You kind of, before you really know what goes into RPG writing, you think that you're going to be able to kind of write about whatever you think is cool and however it fascinates right. you, but that's not the case. You're not painting a masterpiece of your own design. You're painting a house, right? They're saying, mm-hmm. I want you to paint this side of the house. I want you to paint it green, but how you do it and how green, that's up to you. So really you're more constrained than I think a lot of people realize the RPG writing is. And it seems like this is a little more constrained than usual. I'm perfectly happy to work within that. It lets me really kind of shine on some of the descriptions, narratives, NPC interactions, the things that I really like to dig my teeth into. So
given that universe, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, there's certain constraints that they're going to put on you because of that.
Right. And is yours a little more free and open in what you write, or how does that work? Do you not know yet?
I don't. So he kind of told me, here's the four different areas that they had kind of outlined that they wanted to cover. And he actually asked me about how many words I thought it would be. And, you know, given, because there's some, you know, some player archetypes and some, you know, basic things that I've done before. So mm-hmm. I kind of gave ballpark for all the different figures, what I thought they would be. So he said, okay, let me go back and pencil through and see before we put together a contract. But my sense is that it's going to be freedom within, you know, it's more rules-based stuff than flavor-based stuff. Uh-huh. So I'm going to be creating player options, basically, for a very specific category. And I told you the category
right.
of things that go on. And actually the organization that surrounds that, too, which actually makes it kind of cool. I'm actually really excited, you know, kind of to build those two parts, because building the organization and how that works, I think I can put the flavor in.
Well, and it's always really interesting when you can take something that makes some, that kind of thrills you mechanically and be able to say, this is how this mechanical thing is grounded in the game world.
Right.
That's always a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be for Starfinder, similar to you, but in a whole new kind of world that they're developing and this, the neat thing about this set is this is stuff that's not even, you know, nobody's doing in Starfinder right now. So I think that'll make it a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh, that's really neat. Well, enjoy that. And maybe we can talk about it later. Our respective third party writing experiences. I think that could probably make a good topic for later on.
Yeah. I have another question for you. Have you done anything with 5e or thought about doing 5e stuff?
Oh, goodness, I've done quite a lot of 5e. Frankly, the biggest project I've done, the biggest writing project I've ever done was a 5e project. I've worked with a couple of different 5e third-party publishers. For Wizards of the Coast, I've only done their writing for their organized play 5e program. Mm-hmm. But that's been, that was satisfying. I will say that is satisfying and also startlingly lucrative. I made more off of those three products than I think on anything I've ever written for anybody else. And those were kind of short, but their organized play program is enormous. And when I'm getting, you know, such and such percent of every one of those that sells, that kind of adds up.
Wow. And so Wizards gives you a percentage of sales. I didn't realize that.
Through that organized play program. That's the way it works. And I had realized that, but I was sort of logging into my account to see, oh, I wonder how sales on this are doing. And I look and I've got more than $900 in my account that I had no idea was even there. I'm like, oh, and I look at units sold and I'm like, oh, well, that's really neat. Maybe I should check the other two adventures as well. And anyway, let's just say that weekend we paid off quite a couple of bills that we
paid. Yeah, no doubt. No, the reason I bring it up, you know, when I was talking to Wolfgang for an interview that I did a while back, which I think has come out already. Shoot, I don't even know if it's come out. Okay. It must have come out already. The only thing that Cobalt Press does now is focus on 5e, and they used to be Paizo, and they had shifted over. And I had not realized that there was the audience was that much bigger, but that makes sense then, you know.
Yeah, orders of magnitude larger, frankly. Yeah. So
wow.
It's not, there are a number of third-party, and I think, I want to say Cobalt Press is probably the biggest, although I'd have to think about it, but there are a number of third-party publishers who have just gone over from Pathfinder to 5e, and they've never looked back, right? They're just reaching so many more people and making so much more money that it's sort of a no-brainer if it's something you're trying to pay for your life or people's salaries on.
Right. That makes sense. All right. Well, it's been great chatting.
Oh, as always. Yeah.
I think it's that time. I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.